Today is the 25th of August, and this is Kathy bringing you news from the Decatur area. I am going to start today with the Herald and Review with some articles that are for today. Titled, Parochial Schools Fund Their Own Improvements by Valerie Wells. Parochial schools don't receive any funding from government sources for capital improvements. If a roof needs to be replaced or the building needs any kind of upgrade or repair, the school has to raise the money from donations and fundraisers. We work through a 5-year strategic plan and really look through the buildings, said Randy Grigg, administrator at Decatur Christian School. We have a facilities committee that's part of the board, and we try to cooperatively figure out what the highest priorities are. For 5 years in the future, we have expenses laid out that we know of and some we won't know about. Some needs are easier to raise funds for than others, Grigg said. Roofs are not very exciting, and it's a lot harder to get people behind a fundraising drive for something like that than it is for a fun kind of purchase like iPads. At present, Decatur Christian is in need of a new dishwasher, and the one that fits the requirements costs about $10,000. A school can't buy the kind of dishwasher you'd put in your kitchen. All sorts of regulations about drainage and temperature come into play. And this school, unlike many parochial schools, is not affiliated with a specific church or denomination. So while some of the area churches contribute to the school's mission, no church is sponsoring the school. Tuition and fundraisers, that's our revenue stream, Greg said. It's a little bit of a challenge, but it's what it is, and our teachers, our parents, and our churches look at this as a mission. We want our kids to be academically strong leaders and well-grounded in their faith when they graduate. Annual fundraisers for Decatur Christian include the Race for Education, which raises about $15,000 annually, the Spring Auction, which raises $40,000 to $50,000, and this year the Jersey Tenors will perform at the Lincoln Square Theater. The performance is sponsored by Investment Planners and the IPI Wealth Management for the benefit of the school. Similarly, St. Teresa High School, unlike the Catholic elementary schools, is not sponsored by a specific parish. Its big annual fundraiser is the Mega Raffle, upon which the school depends for funding necessities. In 2014, thanks to fundraising and generous donations, the school opened a new athletic annex with a weight room, locker rooms, and restrooms accessible to visitors who attend sports events. The senior class that year donated money and sweat to build a theater room for watching game films and for teachers to use for class. However, even the Catholic elementary schools have to raise money for their needs, though each is associated with a parish. At Our Lady of Lourdes School, the annual spring dinner auction is a major fundraiser. This year it paid for remodeling of the school bathrooms. Every year, school staff consider needs and decides on a funding item, which is the focus of the annual event, and this year it was renovating the restrooms. In the past, funds have remodeled the science classroom and locker rooms and bought new equipment for the playground. We have a little brainstorming session, Uptmore said, of how the funding item is chosen. Joe Snow, the business administrator, can sit down and say, what does our school need? The Lutheran School Association devotes a page of its website to giving, including a drawing of future campus needs. Donations allowed the school to add bleachers to the football field and build baseball and softball diamonds in the last couple of years, and future plans include a separate building for the high school with its own gymnasium. At present, the high school is in the same building, but a separate area and all students use the same gym. The plan also includes a preschool in the future. The LSA is supported, like other parochial schools, in part by tuition. Each of the churches in the association provides financial support. An annual golf outing and a dinner auction provide part of the $300,000 that must come from donations to operate the school annually. The remainder of the $3.4 million budget comes from the churches and tuition. Money for extras must be raised as well. All those funds that public districts get, private schools don't get any, said Decatur Christian's Grigg. Facilities is always a challenge, just painting or putting down a new carpet. We try to be good stewards of every penny that's given. This next article, Picture Perfect, Mattoon Arts Council Organizes a Photography Show, by Rob Stroud. Mattoon. About 120 photos will be displayed during the Mattoon Art Council's upcoming inaugural photography show. The show will be held noon to 8 Friday, 10 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Saturday, and noon to 4 p.m. on Sunday in the Lone Elm Room of the Train Depot, 1718 Broadway Avenue. Admission is free and it is open to the public. Mattoon Arts Coordinator Susan Cole said the show has drawn entries from 40 photographers from Mattoon, Charleston, and other communities in East Central Illinois. "We are very pleased with the number of entries we have for the first year," Cole said. "We are very happy with the turnout and hope for even more next year." Cole said some of the entries are from photographers who had taken part in the Lakeland College Foundation's annual photography show. She said the Arts Council organized the upcoming event after hearing that the foundation was no longer holding a show. She said the foundation provided the council with contact information for photographers from its show. Jacqueline Joynes, Executive Director for College Advancement Foundation CEO, said the original intent of the foundation show was to celebrate local photographers while also drawing new prospective students to campus, but this show was drawing many of the same photographers each year. Joynes said the foundation had also found that it was too short-staffed to efficiently set up a 100-plus display of photos and that the only available display area, the middle of the Lakeland Library, is not big enough to properly exhibit all of these photos. Consequently, Joynes said the foundation put a hold on its photography show after the 2014 event with the hopes that another organization would take ownership. Joynes said she is thankful that the Mattoon Arts Council has started a show of its own. "I think it's very worthwhile for the area and the artists," Joynes said. "It's a good fit for the Arts Council, and they will go do a great job with it." Cole said the Arts Council show will feature the categories of color, black and white, and a My Hometown theme for professionals, amateurs, and students. She said there also will be an adult and a student best of show award. She said the award winners will be announced at 7 p.m. Saturday during a reception for the photographers. The Arts Council show, sponsored by the Consolidated Communications, is being held in the Lone Elm Room on the upper level of the train depot. Entry will be available through the east door. The Coles County Historical Society's museum at the depot is located on the lower level of this building. Headline from the front page, "New Law Allows More EMTs to Administer Epinephrine," by Dan Petrella. All trained emergency medical personnel in Illinois soon will be able to treat severe allergic reactions with epinephrine injected through a syringe rather than with costlier auto-injectors, better known as EpiPens, under law that takes effect January 1st. The measure, sponsored by State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, and signed into law by Governor Bruce Rauner late last week, comes as the maker of the EpiPen is facing increased scrutiny from the federal government over dramatic price increases for the life-saving drug. The cost of a two-dose package of EpiPens made by pharmaceutical company Mylan jumped from less than $100 9 years ago to more than $600 in May, the Associated Press reported Wednesday. While the timing is a coincidence, Rose said recent attention from Congress has attracted the public eye to an issue that was first brought to him by a rural fire protection district that he represents. The Broadlands Longview Fire Protection District is southeastern Champaign County. They currently spend about $2,400 per year on 4 adult and 4 junior EpiPens, according to Rose's office, but it will only have to spend about $50 annually to stock vials of epinephrine under the new law. "We're going to be able to provide this life-saving medicine at a far, far lower price for our local property taxpayers," Rose said, adding that the savings will be even greater for larger emergency medical services agencies. Dylan Ferguson, director of the McLean County Area EMS System, said the combined savings for agencies in the system could be as much as $200,000 over 2 to 3 years. The system is made up of 43 agencies and roughly 900 emergency medical personnel in McLean, DeWitt, Tazewell, Woodford, and Putnam counties. "For us, it was significantly a cost issue," Ferguson said. Paramedics and more highly trained emergency medical technicians have long been able to inject epinephrine through syringes to treat potentially fatal allergic reactions, but the new law will make it possible for EMTs with basic level training to do so, Ferguson said. "Those EMTs often work for smaller rural agencies that can't afford to hire paramedics and others with more advanced training," he said. Agencies will be able to use the same training curriculum for basic level EMTs that they currently use for paramedics and the more highly trained EMTs, said Melanie Arnold, a spokeswoman for the Illinois Department of Public Health. "If they wish to create new training procedures, however, the department will have to approve them," she said. Arnold said the new law leaves it up to individual agencies to decide whether they want to train basic level EMTs to inject epinephrine with a syringe. Several members of Congress have sent Mylan letters in recent days seeking more information about the increase for EpiPens. The company said Monday that the increases are a result of changing insurance coverage and that it's making efforts to make the drug more affordable through discount programs for schools and individual patients. Front page headline, Some Resist Ending Corporal Punishment by Carolyn Thompson. Two licks with a wooden paddle in the principal's office was the price that 11-year-old Kaylee Zacher of Dexter, Georgia paid for ignoring warnings about falling behind in her schoolwork. Rules are rules, said her mother, Kimberly Zacher, so why shouldn't the punishment be the same as at home when her daughter falls out of line? What we instill in our children is if you break the rules, there's a punishment that you have to suffer the consequences, she said. You don't want to give two sets of rules. Although corporal punishment in American schools has declined in recent decades, paddling is still on the books in 19 states despite calls from the U.S. Education Department to curb punitive discipline, which has been shown to affect minority and disabled students disproportionately. We know that the use of corporal punishment tends to be intertwined with other factors, such as a child's race or disability status, Deputy Assistant Secretary Tanya Clay House said. Black children were more than twice as likely to be corporally punished than white children, and nearly eight times more likely to be corporally punished than Hispanic children, the Children's Defense Fund said in a 2014 report that analyzed 2009-10 Education Department data. But in corners of the country where it remains deeply woven in culture and tradition, some school administrators say that corporal punishment has broad support from parents, that it preserves learning time that would be lost to a suspension, and that they see little need to give up a practice that dates back generations. Corporal punishment is an immediate consequence to an action, and there's no downtime. It's really pretty effective, said Camille Wright, a superintendent in Enterprise, Alabama, part of the mostly southern swath of states where paddling is still allowed. The U.S. Education Department, whose statistics show that more than 100,000 students are subjected to corporal punishment annually, has been urging schools through its Rethink Discipline initiative to create safe and supportive climates that emphasize positive behavior. The Department of Education strongly believes that states have the power to change, House said. Several medical and human rights groups have called for an end to a practice criticized as ineffective and potentially harmful. You want to keep kids in the classroom, but to suggest that the only way to keep them is to beat them with a stick is ludicrous, said Dennis Parker, director of the ACLU's racial justice program. The ACLU teamed with the Human Rights Watch for a 2009 report that called for banning corporal punishment in schools. Saying things like peer courts, conflict resolution programs, and character education were better approaches. Paddling can cause pain, humiliation, and in some cases, deep bruising or other lasting physical or mental injury, the report said. Debate spiked in April after a mother in Georgia aired video of a Jasper County school official holding her crying kindergartner as he was about to be paddled, and she said she regretted giving the school permission to discipline him that way. In her Alabama district, Wright said few parents sign an opt-out form that is sent home each year, a practice common in schools that paddle. Her district, like others, also phones parents for permission before administering up to three SWATs, even if they've already granted blanket consent and requires another administrator as a witness. There is a cultural element in support for the practice, notably among black parents in the rural South, Parker said. When we did our report, it was sometimes difficult, particularly in southern states, to get support from communities of color for getting rid of corporal punishment. Some of that is what is a reflection of, this is what I'm used to, this worked for me, he said. Wright said her district nevertheless is slowly moving away from corporal punishment for things like cursing a teacher or leaving without permission, even though there is little opposition. Many states have outlawed corporal punishment in schools, but it remains legal in Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, North Carolina, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Wyoming. Kaylee Zacher said the paddling she received from her vice principal last year after missing several assignments and receiving numerous warnings at Southwest Lawrence Elementary School in Rince, Georgia, left her shaken. I was sad and still scared and shaking, and I was crying a little, she said. It was just suck it up and continue class. But did she get better about her work? Yes, her mom said. She talked about it for a couple of weeks, and she said she did not want that to happen again. This headline reads, Rauner says pension fund move would be devastating. Governor Bruce Rauner's administration says a pending move by Illinois' largest public pension fund would increase the state's required payment by hundreds of millions of dollars, potentially leading to higher taxes or massive cuts to education and social services already suffering amid a budget crisis. The board of the teachers' retirement system, which serves more than 400,000 teachers outside of Chicago, is scheduled to vote Friday on whether to lower its expected rate of return on investments. A reduction would trigger a larger contribution from the state, where the Republican governor and Democrat-led legislature have gone more than a year without agreeing on how to close a multi-billion dollar budget hole or address a $111 billion unfunded pension liability. The retirement system won't make public the recommended change or its impact on Illinois payment for the next fiscal year until Friday's meeting, spokesman Dave Urbanek said Wednesday. When the system last changed its assumption from an 8% to a 7.5% in 2014, it cost Illinois an additional $200 million. That's almost the total combined state funding for six public universities last year, Rauner Senior Advisor for Revenue and Pensions warned. Unforeseen and unknown automatic cost increases will have a devastating impact on the state's ability to provide adequate resources to social service programs and education, Michael Mahoney stated in a memo sent Monday to Rauner's chief of staff. He also called the lack of public discussion ahead of Friday's vote troubling. The possible board action comes as pension systems nationwide are reporting lackluster returns for the most recent fiscal year, and analysts and credit rating agencies are increasingly pressuring them to lower assumptions to ensure there's enough money to pay benefits. While retirement systems set their estimated rate of return based on 20 or 30 years of projections, some analysts predict the coming years won't meet many systems' expectations. Several funds already have dropped their projections, including the $185 billion New York State and local retirement system, which lowered its assumed rate from 7.5% to 7% in September. Other major pension systems have also said they're considering it. Illinois Teachers Retirement System reported a 4.6% return for the 2015 fiscal year. It will release preliminary returns for the fiscal year that ended June 30th on Friday, Urbanek said. Illinois' pension problems go back decades, however, due largely to state lawmakers voting for years to skip or short the annual payment. Illinois now has the worst funded pensions of any state, with the accounts holding about 42% of what's needed. To cover benefits as promised and make up for years of missed payments and investment returns, Illinois' contribution to its five pension funds this year will be about $7.8 billion, roughly one-fifth of its general revenue fund. Republican State Senate Leader Christine Rodonio, a key Rauner ally, said she agreed the system should lower its rate when it did so in 2014, and it may need to do so again. But she took issue on Wednesday that the board could vote within minutes of receiving a briefing from its actuaries Friday and without discussing it with Rauner or legislative leaders. She said they were briefed in 2014. I just think that needs to happen again because of the impact on taxpayers, said Rodonio, who wants the board to delay its vote. Urbanek said the board has historically taken the vote in August of every other year because of a deadline to provide the information to state budget officials. The 13-person board includes six people elected by system members. They include Vice President Cinda Klickna, who's also president of the Illinois Education Association, and has clashed with Rauner over his anti-union positions. Rauner appoints the other members, though three of the seats that he fills are vacant. This next headline, schools partner with Corps of Engineers, agreement providing land access and learning at Lake Shelbyville from Sharon Barricklow. A desire to provide students with a good education and keep them living and working in central Illinois when they grow up has an area school district partnering with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for a variety of projects at Lake Shelbyville. Okaw Valley School District Superintendent Kent Strouder, along with high school and middle school principals Matt Shoaff and Ross Forlines, unveiled their community occupational research partnership at the Lake Shelbyville Visitor Center on Tuesday. The agreement, signed by Ocala Valley and Colonel Anthony Mitchell, the Corps St. Louis District Commander, gives the school access to 40 acres of land surrounding Lake Shelbyville for 4 years and provides opportunities for students to study agriculture, science, technology, engineering, and math using real-life situations. Over half of Americans never move more than 18 miles from where they grew up, Forline said. Our students can stay here if we can prepare them to work in good jobs. Stouter said administrators first discussed the plan early in the year. After contacting the Corps and getting encouragement, the three administrators, all who grew up in the area, used community connections to make the project a reality. It was 17 days from inception to actual work, Forline said. Students work at Forest Bow Woods Campground getting it ready for the spring season. We had so many partners offering to help us with the equipment we needed. The students received 2 20-acre plots with which to work. One, OV Point, near Findlay, is a mini ecosystem with students using it to study pollination and natural development to create a wildlife area. The other is a crop field with local businesses providing equipment, seed, fertilizers, and other farming implements. Donors also provided students with trail cameras, chainsaws, and trimming tools. Administrators said they want every student at Ocala Valley to have access to the projects. This beautiful area is in our backyard, said freshman Paige Coleman, 14. We can use it to our advantage to learn, but also to help protect it and be good stewards. It made sense for us to be involved, said donor Jeff Sloan of Sloan Implement in Assumption. We want to hire from a local pool of applicants. Mitchell congratulated the students and educators for creating the project. This is truly amazing to see and hear. The level of commitment, the energy and drive far exceeds anything I could have imagined, he said. We have plenty of land, and to make it a living classroom is one of the best uses that I can think of. And a little bit of politics. Kirk and Duckworth clash at Normal Ag Event by Derek Bailey. Even without seeing each other face to face, Republican U.S. Senator Mark Kirk and Democratic U.S. Representative Tammy Duckworth traded body blows Tuesday on a farm north of Normal. Both spoke to an Illinois Farm Bureau gathering and fielded questions from reporters with about 10 weeks left until they face off for Kirk's Senate seat in the November 8th election. Duckworth, who spoke first, hit Kirk for referring to President Barack Obama as drug dealer-in-chief after the president's $400 million payment to Iran was linked to the release of U.S. prisoners. I just don't think that's language befitting a United States senator, she said. He should apologize, and let's move on and focus on what we need for the people of Illinois. Kirk doubled down on the remark. I have a problem with sending $400 million in 50 euro notes directly to the Ayatollah, he said. Republicans have criticized the Obama administration after it acknowledged that the repayment of money from a 1970s Iranian account was connected to a U.S.-Iranian prisoner exchange in January. The administration denies the money was ransom, saying it used the money, which the Islamic Republic would have soon recouped in the money one way or the other, as leverage to guarantee the prisoner's release. Kirk also hit Duckworth for encouraging the federal government to accept 200,000 refugees, including many from Syria. Duckworth said Tuesday those refugees will go through a screening process. She directly lied to this group by saying that the Syrian refugees are thoroughly vetted, even though the Director of National Intelligence and FBI say there's no screening that's meaningful, he said. We can't lie to the American people about national security like that. It could lead to another 9/11. Both also spoke about a variety of issues that affect farmers, including alternative fuels, immigration, infrastructure, taxation, and trade. Each spoke in favor of increasing usage of biofuels, including ethanol, which is frequently produced with corn growth in Illinois. Both said they'll push for high renewable fuel standards from the Environmental Protection Agency. On immigration, both spoke in favor of making it easier for undocumented immigrants who serve in the military to become citizens. Kirk served in the U.S. Navy. Duckworth was in the U.S. Army. On infrastructure, the candidates focused on the Mississippi River, a major agricultural trade artery. Duckworth said she'll fight for the $12 million U.S. Army Corps of Engineer project to improve locks and dams, while Kirk favors using private contractors for that work. They can go a lot faster than the slow Army Corps of Engineers, he says. Both says they oppose the state tax which applies to inheritance, including family farms, though Duckworth said she supports a similar measure for extremely wealthy earners. I don't think people that live in Manhattan making billions of dollars should get a break, she said, referring to Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. Both candidates also spoke in favor of opening up new markets for farmers to sell in, but they differed on the details. Duckworth spoke in favor of expanding trade with Cuba and against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and Kirk vice versa. Gill seeking court order to be on ballot by Dan Petrella. A federal judge is expected to rule today on whether David Gill should appear on the November 8th ballot as an independent candidate in the 13th Congressional District despite not having enough signatures on his nominating petitions. Gill, a Bloomington physician who's previously run for Congress as a Democrat, sued the Illinois State Board of Elections earlier this month, challenging the state's signature requirement for independent congressional candidates. The federal lawsuit argues that the requirement is unconstitutional because it's out of line with the requirements for major party candidates and for independents seeking other offices. With the Elections Board facing a Friday deadline to certify the ballot, U.S. District Judge Sue Myerscough said she would issue a written ruling by this afternoon on Gill's request that Board be ordered to allow his name on the ballot. Gill had to collect 10,750 signatures, nearly 15 times more than U.S. Republican Rodney Davis, Republican of Taylorville, and Democratic challenger Mark Wicklund of Decatur, who each had to collect fewer than 740. By comparison, independent U.S. Senate candidates only have to collect five times as many signatures as their major party opponents. Working with 18 volunteers, Gill collected 8,593 valid signatures. Sam Conman, the Springfield attorney representing Gill, said the candidate made a Herculean effort to gather the needed signatures in the 90 days allowed under state law. The task was made even more difficult by the geography of the sparsely populated 13th District, which stretches from Champaign County to the Mississippi River and includes parts of Bloomington, Normal, Decatur, and Springfield. During a hearing on Wednesday, Conman argued that the state has no compelling reason to keep Gill off the ballot. He noted that candidates frequently appear on the ballot and receive votes despite not having collected nearly enough signatures, or in at least one case, without having collected any, because no one challenges their nominating petitions at the Elections Board. Gill faces removal from the ballot because Wicklund and former Macon County Republican Party Chair Jerry Stocks challenged his signatures. Conman also argued that the 90-day requirement which the General Assembly approved in 1983 amounts to nothing more than an incumbent protection law. He cited remarks that the sponsor, then-State Harry, Representative Harry Urell, made on the House floor before the vote. "I'm trying to protect all of the members of the House who are down here doing the people's business while somebody is back in your district circulating petitions. And if he has enough time, there won't be any petitions left for you to circulate or to sign," Urell said, according to House transcripts. "The state needs to set clear rules to prevent overcrowding the ballot and potential voter confusion," Assistant Attorney General Sarah Newman said, noting that the 90-day window and similar signature requirements have been upheld in previous cases. And that's all we have time for today. For the Herald and Review, we will come back in a couple of minutes. It's the second half. I hope you'll stay tuned.